In seminary, we're taught a lot of things about how to craft sermons, especially as it relates to application or examples that are given. And one of the things that I think I've done a decent job of this, I'm sure I've messed up throughout the years, is to make sure that the examples that are given out there that are like good examples, like, oh, hey, here's how to live out your Christian faith, that you try to avoid using yourself as the example. In fact, it's a little bit better sometimes to say, here's how I've messed up as a Christian living out my life, in hopes that others will go, oh, wow, that guy has the exact same problems that I have, and he struggles as well, and so I now feel this is good. Now, the problem will become if all of a sudden you think that I don't do anything right in all my life, and you're like, wow, this guy is really bad. Why are we listening to him? He seems to not have his life in place. I feel that this is one of those tensions we're going to be reading, especially in this particular section of Deuteronomy, because Moses is going to be recounting the stories of the past, and one specific story that is relatively popular, and it's interesting how he remembers other details. Now, I'm not going to say that they're different details. I think it was part of the story, but you don't get that fullest, completest story just by reading through the book of Numbers. So this section, and if you want to, you can write it in your Bibles. This is Numbers 13 and 14 is this whole series, the rest of the chapter about spies being sent out and a rebellion against the Lord. Moses is recounting. They are currently in the story, they are currently at the promised land. They're looking at the promised land. They're ready to go into the promised land. And Moses decides, I'm going to give you a couple more things to think about. So as he recounts these, we have to go backwards in time to that period. So we return back to another time when they were standing before the promised land. And we talked just briefly about it, but I didn't want to get into it too much last week. But this is the time when they are coming into this transition period, and they're ready to go in, and someone somehow, for some reason, comes up with a really bad idea that then everyone thinks is a good idea. And it's interesting also hearing Moses' response to this, because I think he actually does try to admit he went along with things that he probably shouldn't have gone along with. So Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 19, my heading says spy sent out. And this is, if you know the awesome kids song, right? We've sung that before, right? So you put a 3 in your left hand, right? And you put a 1 in your right hand. Oh, you're not doing this. This is not just me doing it. Come on, everyone. 3 in your left hand. Okay, 1 in your right hand. And then make an X with your 2, 4. Okay, so now what Roman numerals, what kind of weird stuff is this? What is that? 12. Yeah, all right. So 12 men went to spy on Canaan. 10 were bad and 2 were good. Yeah. Have you sung this before, David? No, So 12 men went to spy on Canaan, 10 were bad and 2 were good. What did they see when they spied on Canaan? 10 were bad and 2 were good. Some saw Joshua, giants, big and tall. Some saw, at least one person laughed, thank you. Some saw grapes and clusters fall. Some saw God was in it all, something like that. And overall, I got in it all. That's okay. It doesn't matter. 10 were bad, 2 were good. So that's the kids' version of it. It helps you remember that there were 12 men that went out. So let's see how it plays out in Deuteronomy. All the DCs memorize that song. Yeah, that's very important. Then, as the Lord our God commanded us, we set out from Horeb and went toward the hill country of the Amorites through all that vast and dreadful desert that you have seen. And so we reached Kadesh Barnea. This is now where they're at. Kadesh Barnea gets to be known in a certain way, and it's unfortunate how this will always be the spot of rebellion. Verse 20, then I said to you, you have reached the hill country of the Amorites, which the Lord our God is giving us. See, the Lord your God has given you the land. Go up and take possession of it, as the Lord, the God of your fathers, told you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. By far, the two things that affect people in the covenant relationship with God the most is fear and discouragement. And this is where they're at. Moses already knows, I think probably because Moses himself feels just a little bit of fear, feels a little bit of discouragement. Granted, he's not going to be going into the promised land, but he knows that they are, and he's feeling for them. But this seems to be some underlying things that are going on. And that's the same with us. I mean, think about your life, especially when you are about to maybe transition into a new thing in life, or you're just in a different season of your life, that when you look at it, one of our first initial reactions is to always be afraid or be discouraged. We're afraid because we're not quite too sure of God's activity with us, and we're discouraged because we know we are idiots and we don't do things right. And those two things, once they come into combination, become very powerful demotivators for those who are in the covenant relationship with God. So he knows this, he's telling them this, and then he says, then all of you came to me and said, let us send men ahead to spy out the land for us and bring back a report about the route we are to take and the towns we will come to. Now, out of curiosity, does this sound like a good idea? I think it sounds like a fine idea. Like, okay, we're going to go in. As we go in, like, what route should we take? What towns should we hit? How do we actually accomplish that which God has given to us? And so Moses decides that he is going to go along with it. I mean, verse 23, the idea seemed good to me. So I selected 12 of you, one man from each tribe. They left and went up the hill country and came to the valley of Eshkol and explored it, taking with them some of the fruit of the land. They brought it down and reported, it is a good land that the Lord our God is giving us. Now, right there, there's already a problem. I mean, it took me a while. I read through a couple of times, and then I heard someone mention it that, wait a second, what was their goal? What were they supposed to be doing? We're going to go into the land. We're going to find the correct route and figure out which towns, you know, what are we up against? And what do they bring back? Fruit. Yeah, this is some people have this disorder. It's called ADOLAT. ADOLAT. Do you have that disorder? It's called attention deficit. Oh, look at that. They're in the promised land. They're walking and they're doing stuff. And what do? They find fruit. We are easily distracted Christians, are we not? Maybe God has given a calling on your life saying, this is what you are going to do. And all of a sudden, something shiny starts over there. And you're like, oh, well, maybe I should be going that way, though God has clearly called me to go this way. But that looks really fun. And that's got a lot of stuff that I like. Got to be careful of that. Maybe it's in regards to a new job. That, oh, this is what is going to help me in my life, but that job over there is going to give me a heck of a lot more money, and I think I'd rather go that way than that way. Or maybe it's with your kids, and you're trying to decide in terms of what preschool or what school or what after-school activities to be a part of, and you get sucked into the problem of thinking that your kid needs to be the fastest, smartest, and greatest at everything. I don't know how many times I've run into certain preschool families, and they're like, oh, my kid already knows the ABCs. And I'm like, yeah, okay, great. Oh, my kid's already potty trained. That's good. Do you know that my kid is already playing the cello? Really? Is that so? And we get sucked into the things that are not important without looking at the things that are important. As we raise children, what would we say is the most important thing to be focused on? Focused on God, focused on family, focused on the development of a child that is feeling love and nurture and knows who God is, and then also then lives their life accordingly. But so quickly, we get distracted by, well, look at that. We turn and forget all that God has done. And whether that's because it's something shiny or something scary, because this is, though they bring back fruit, there's another problem they're bringing back. It's not just fruit that they bring back. They bring back something even worse. So they say, this is a good land the Lord God is giving to us. And I do love rebellion against the Lord. So this is one of these events that is now going to be known as the rebellion. Isn't that great? Something so big, something so massive that takes place that it becomes known as the place of rebellion. Well, that's unfortunate, but it was extremely damaging to the entire community. But you were unwilling to go up. You rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. You grumbled in your tents and said, "The Lord hates us. So he brought us out of Egypt to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us. Where can we go? Our brothers have made us lose heart. They say," so they're reporting what the spies are saying, "they say the people are stronger and taller than we are. The cities are large with walls up to the sky. And lo and behold, we even saw the Anakites there." I'm going to get into the Anakites in future things because they're actually going to do some battle. But anyone know who the Anakites are by any chance? Yeah, they're giants. There's a passage in Numbers that actually links them to the Nephilim of Genesis chapter 6. So these are like massive, large human beings that are causing the people to lose heart. Now, it's tempting for me to mock the Israelites as they look at this issue that's ahead of them. In fact, a couple of times as I was reading through this and practicing in my mind, how would I speak this? I did a couple of times throw in the little whiny voice. But as I thought about it more and more, I realized that what they're going through is something that I think we all go through at one time or another. So it's not something that I think also comes from whininess. I think it comes from a very real place. No, don't raise your hand. Have you ever felt that God hates you? Now, again, we can get into the theological discussion of the definitions of love and hate. And the biblical definition of love and hate, especially in regards to God and people, is more on the covenantal relationship. So it's not that like God loves us or God hates us, but God chose us or God did not choose us. God is with me, God is not with me. These are the distinctions that are there. But I think I can agree that there are times that I've looked at my circumstances and I go, wow, God must hate me. Now, if you've never felt that, that's wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful. And may you never, ever come to that conclusion. But I think that it would be irresponsible of us to solely make fun of them, because there is evil in this world and there is heartache and pain in this world. And we don't just simply have 100% faith 100% of the time. We go through times in our lives when everything seems to be falling apart. So, has your life fallen apart in any way? Has there been something in your past that you did, or something in your past that happened to you, and it literally wiped you out, almost destroying you? And you say, why does God hate me so much? Or a corollary to that, which is almost as insidious, which is, what did I do to deserve this? What sin did I commit that is causing this? And again, we get this really horrible theology. I do something wrong, and so God then comes quickly and punishes me and slaps me around and knocks me to the ground and says, don't do that ever again. We sometimes think that's how God operates. This Israelite nation has been wandering and has been coming through, even in Moses' words, it's a very hostile land. And there are a lot of people around, and God's trying to give them directions. In fact, more important than that, God decided, I'm going to actually be with you in a very physical way. There's going to be a pillar of cloud during the daytime. Now, I don't know about you, I would love if, like, God showed up in this pillar, and I'm like, okay, Lord, which direction should I head? Should I take this job or this job? Should I marry this person or this person? Should I pursue this career or this career? That was weird on the marry one. Yeah, so like, I guess people are like dating two people. Which one do I choose? Yeah, hopefully that's not the case. But how do I live my life? And if only, like, we had like a little, like, and we write it out on two pieces of paper and we throw it out there and we just watch and step back as the pillar of cloud kind of just moves one direction. And we're like, oh, okay, now I see. Or when it's even harder at nighttime, it's a little bit darker, it's a little bit more difficult to see. God doesn't show up as a pillar of cloud anymore. He shows up as a pillar of fire. So it's a little bit easier to see. They have been guided through a very hostile land, following God in his entirety. Yet they get to this place, and all of a sudden, they all start losing heart because they're listening to all the wrong reports. This is a question for us. Who do we listen to? And what are we also saying? I know of a friend of mine who is a pastor, and years and years and years ago, he came to me and he goes, Mark, I think God is calling me to plant a church. And I'm like, that's amazing. I said, this is going to be the hardest stuff you're ever going to do. Because I had planted a church and I think I was maybe 7 years into it. And I said, this is going to be incredibly hard, incredibly difficult. But I looked at him, I said, I think you actually have all the skills necessary to plant this church. And he goes, you do? I said, yes, I do. I think you have it. I think you have the right faith. I think you have the right temperament. I think you have the right vision. This is really, really important. I think you should do this. And I'll walk with you. I'll walk beside you, whatever you need. And so it was a couple months later, because we were at a pastor's conference together. A couple months later, I messaged him. I'm like, hey, so like, how's it going? And he goes, yeah, I don't think I'm going to do the church planting thing. And I go, oh, okay, why is that? And he goes, well, I started talking to some people and they started telling me about, especially like how hard it is financially to plant a church, right? You sometimes have no money. And I'm like, oh, that is true. Sometimes that does happen. And he said, and it also is bothering me because as a church planter, really you kind of have to do everything. I go, I've plunged toilets. Yeah. I have to take out my own trash. It's really, really sad. But you know, it's work that is good and important, but you also get a chance to, experience this with other people as well. And, he says, I don't know. Everyone is telling me that it's really hard and I shouldn't do it and I should just stay. Because he was at a church that was relatively larger, a little bit more successful. I was like, oh, wow, this is really kind of cool that he's in this neat, larger church. But everyone was saying, I don't think you should do that. So guess what he chose? He chose the easy route. He chose the route that said, I don't know if I... And this is important for us. Who are you listening to and what are you saying? If you have someone that is in your life and they are talking about leaning on God and trusting in God, even in things that are maybe even semi-crazy according to other people's viewpoints, if someone is passionately and faithfully racing after God, I have heard people knock them down a bit. There was a lady at a church I served at previously, and her faith got completely awakened. It was amazing. Like, she was one who was not really strong in her faith, but all of a sudden she was making connections to people. She was really passionate about things, and it was really crazy because she started showing up to every single worship service. Even the ones where it was like repeated sermons, like, you know, I would preach a Saturday night and two on Sunday morning and then one in the evening, which would be totally different. And she'd be showing up to all of the things. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible. And she's like, I can't get enough. Like, I am in this. This is important. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, she stopped. And Heather and I, it was Heather that talked to her and said, hey, I noticed something's up. What's going on? And she goes, yeah, some people started thinking I was a little weird for going to church too much. I was like, oh, going to church too much. Well, that's unfortunate, right? And I've always battled this as well. Sometimes people are at a religious institution, whether that is a religious public, a religious school, a church school, or a church high school, or even a church or a religious college, and they say things like, well, you know, I go to chapel or I have to be at chapel, why do I have to then come to Sunday morning service? Got that a lot, especially from parents. They're like, I think my kid has enough religion in their life. And I'm like, oh, wow, I'm really sorry to hear that. I'm really sorry to think that you somehow have figured it all out. Who are you listening to and what are you saying? If people are pushing you towards God, listen to them. If people are doing things to draw you away from God, whether that's through things that they say or things that they do, mark and avoid. Listen to those who are talking about trusting in God. Because if you remember, the spies that came back, you know, with our little song, 10 were bad and 2 were good, right? It was the 10 that came back and said all these things like, there's giants in the land, I don't think this is good, but wow, at least we got fruit. Two of them did not say that, right? Do you remember those two that said that? Joshua and Caleb. So let's keep going in this story. Because Moses jumps in there a little bit too, verse 29. Then I said to you, do not be terrified, do not be afraid of them. The Lord your God who is going before you will fight for you as he did for you in Egypt before your very eyes and in the desert. So first thing to do when you're facing a really bad situation, maybe the first thing you should do is look backwards and say, what has God done for me in the past? And if God has been faithful and he's seen you through difficult times, do you think he just kind of built you up spiritually so that he can just totally and utterly destroy you in a public way? Because again, that's what they're saying. God hates me. So if you're feeling that way, look into the past and say, what has God done up until then? God has guided you. God has been with you. This is some of the most tender things. God gets described in so many ways. It's incredible. God is a warrior, right? He fights. I know we don't talk about that a lot because it seems a little violent, but God is a warrior and he takes out enemies very well. God is also a guide. He's leading throughout the desert experience. But then I love this idiom, middle of 31, there you saw how the Lord your God carried you as a father carries his son all the way you went until you reached this place. That is the tenderness and love of God that we often also miss out on. That God would pick us up and carry us through when we feel like we can't go on any further. When we feel like there's nothing left in the tank. When sorrow has so overwhelmed us that our tears have dried up and all we do is dry heave from there on out. Or the situation looks so bleak with where we're at and everything is falling apart and we just simply say, God is not with me. He is. He is carrying you when you can't take another step yourself. Verse 32, in spite of this, you did not trust in the Lord your God who went ahead of you on your journey in fire by night and in a cloud by day to search out places for you to camp and to show you the way you should go. So he's reminding him, look at all that he has done. And in spite of all of that, this is when you're going to now jump ship. When the Lord heard what you said, he was angry and solemnly swore, not a man of this evil generation shall see the good land I swore to give your forefathers, except Caleb, son of Jephunneh. And Joshua is going to be mentioned here in just a moment. So it's Joshua and Caleb. He will see it, and I will give him and his descendants the land he set his feet on because he followed the Lord wholeheartedly. And we talked about this last week. I think we miss out on a lot of God's blessings in our life because we just simply don't trust him. It all starts with trust. If you trust that God has been with you in the past, then he will be with you in the present, and he will be with you in the future. Continue to follow him. And that's as simple as it gets. Moses then starts shifting, unfortunately, and it is kind of funny how he's 120, so we're going to give him a little bit of slack here. He doesn't quite remember all the juicy details. He says, so verse 37, because of you, the Lord became angry with me also and said, you shall not enter it either, but your assistant Joshua, son of Nun, will enter it. Is that how the story went? It's funny. Yeah, last week we talked about it. This was the whole, speak to that rock, it'll give you water. And then Joshua whips out his staff and, in this big, grand, dramatic fashion, strikes the rock. And God in his goodness and graciousness still provides the water, but says, Joshua, that was not real. Moses, that was not really cool. You can't see the land. Now, I read one commentary and I thought he did a decent job of saying, well, maybe what he is saying is that if they would have just simply followed God the first time, maybe this wouldn't have happened. But I don't know. I wrote it in my Bible. It just sounds like it's the blame game once again, right? You have caused me to sin, and we've always got to be careful of that, right? We also do that with Satan all the time, right? Oh my gosh, Satan tempted me. Well, okay, yeah, he's tempts a lot of people, and a lot of people don't give in to that stupidity. So maybe you should reconsider who's really at fault. And in the end of the day, if you sin, whose fault is it? It's Eve's fault. Yeah. It's your own fault. Hey, yeah. But we quickly shift to someone else. If only I didn't have original sin. If only I didn't have stupid, overbearing parents. If I didn't have red hair. It's amazing what we shift blame to. You know who's responsible? It's you. Why don't you maybe think about that a little bit? I'd love to say, Moses, yeah, I know that there might have been this event then could have prevented this other event, but the thing is, it didn't. So take ownership. But what Moses is actually shooting for right now is a really important thing, which, can I just tell you, once again, my deepest gratitude to all of you. There was, not that long ago, a church that I was helping out with that was going through some conflict. And in the conflict, a person who was really causing some issues, and I got pulled into it. And so the guy was talking to me and he said, Pastor Mark, I've prayed and I do not like the pastors that are now in the positions they're at. And I believe that God has called me to make their lives as miserable as possible so that they leave. Yeah, that's what I did. I was like, wow, that's an interest. Is that what God's doing these days? I guess I didn't understand that. And he was convinced. He was convinced of it. And I'm like, I don't think that that's actually accurate information. And after about 3-4 months, he finally headed off and did something else and moved to another congregation. I know that there is conflict all over this place, and I am again so grateful for all of you and your encouragement. I cannot also thank you enough for all the encouragement you give to those people that are doing other things. And this is what Moses is really trying to emphasize. I'll reread verse 38. But your assistant, Joshua, son of Nun, will enter it. Encourage him, because he will lead Israel to inherit it. And the little ones that you said would be taken captive, your children, who do not know yet good from evil, they will enter the land, and I will give it to them, and they will take possession of it. He's saying the power of encouragement is incredible. And again, thank you from the bottom of my heart that we are getting the chance to encourage people to enter in to especially certain Christian vocations. We have pre-sem students that help lead the liturgical components. We have a vicar that is helping and assisting and learning what it means to be a pastor. We have DCE students who are learning and growing. And it's so great because I know that they're not always the best, except for Jaden. He was pretty good today. No, I'm just kidding. Jaden's amazing. And we have got some amazing people. But I have experienced in other places where people who are learning and growing and trying, all of a sudden, they're getting slammed and hit. And our job is to encourage. Our job is to lift up and send out and grow up and allow people to come into their faith. I think it's also great whenever we have people who are not maybe strong in their faith. That's fantastic. I pray if someone is thinking about faith, trying to understand faith, and they're asking questions about faith, man, that is not the time we come in and say, wow, really, you don't believe? What's wrong with you? Why don't you, like, it's really obvious what the right answer is, but do you have sin in your life? You must have sin in your life. That must be it. No, we encourage and we say, thank you for asking questions. This is really wonderful. This is really important that I think you're doing that. We had that happen yesterday when a group of people were walking around and they found some guy, and he said that he was religious, but not, sorry, he was spiritual, but not religious. And he grew up with a Roman Catholic background, but he knew a lot of Bible stories, but he was convinced. He said, look, there's no way that God will take me because I sinned too much. I'm outside the boundaries of God's love. And it was very hard because these college students are like, gosh, what do we say to that? And they said, look, I think we could find some pretty nasty people inside Scripture that do some really bad things. And maybe you could see that God, you are not outside the boundaries of God's incredible, gracious love. And so he says, can you hold on a second? I'm going to grab my Bible because I want to start taking some notes on it. So he brings the Bible back out. And unfortunately, it's a Mormon Bible. So it doesn't quite have all of the stuff there. And so they're telling me the story. And so they say, hey, can we get a Bible and like take it back to them? And I'm like, there's Bibles right there. Take 12 of them if you need it. I don't care. Hand them out to whoever needs it. And they said, we don't think we did well. I go, are you kidding me? You planted a seed that is incredible. You encouraged someone. You didn't dismiss them out of hand. You were incredibly loving and caring. Can I tell you, I think we just need a lot more of that. If people are around you constantly discouraging you, now don't mess up discouragement with people calling you to a better way of life and maybe pointing out your sin, right? You might get bummed out about that, but that's what they're doing, is they're trying to encourage you to not go down that path. I think if you have people around you that are encouraging you in your faith, that is the most important thing. I pray that you continue to do that. Verse 40, but as for you, turn around and set out toward the desert along the route to the Red Sea. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. Here's the axiom. I'll say it to you and then we'll see it. With God, you can't lose. Without God, you can't win. This is really important. We get stuck sometimes thinking about how good we are or how equipped we are, and it is just absolutely crucial. If you do not have God blessing what you're doing, I'm telling you, you will not win, period. And that is what I told the one guy that said that he feels called to, you know, discourage the pastors until they leave. I'm like, that God's not in that one. I'm sorry. But others who say, yeah, I'm really trying to read my Bible, or I'm really trying to get closer to God, God will bless that somehow. Because if you're doing that and you're with God, you cannot lose, period. And that's what happens here. So these Israelites, they're thinking to themselves, I think we messed up. God wanted us to enter into the promised land. We did not, and we were overshadowed by our fear and our discouragement. We did not step out in faith, and now he is upset with us, and he's telling us to turn around and go back the other way. And someone gets the great, crazy, wacky idea, let's go into the promised land. Let's go and conquer it. Right? Let's you know what? God originally wanted us to go and do that, so let's just go and do that. Oh my goodness. So verse 41, then you replied, we have sinned against the Lord. That sounds good, right? Like confession. Like, I think I've messed up. I've sinned against the Lord. I've sinned against the Lord. We will go up and fight as the Lord our God commanded us. So every one of you put on weapons thinking it easy to go up to the hill country. Now, what do you think is going to happen? They're all, God has said, go into the land. They said, no. And God said, okay, fine. Go and return the other way. And they say, no. And they're going to keep marching forward. If God is not with you, you will not win. Period. That's just the way it is. You might have temporary successes. Things might go well at certain times in your life. But this was also something that was very important for the early church as they tried to decide who this guy named Jesus was. It's this man named Jesus who was followed by a lot of people who then died on a cross. And then the rumors are out there that 3 days later he rose from the dead again. And there was this movement of people following him and worshiping him and spreading that message. And the old guard was like, gosh, what do we do about this? And finally, some really, really, really smart old guy stood up and said, look, if this is from God, if Jesus is from God, if what he did actually happened, we can't stop it. We can put up all the barriers in the world. It ain't gonna work. But if this man named Jesus was in fact cursed by God, hated by God, rejected by God, it will fail. It will ultimately fail. So why are we worried about this? Let's see where God is at. That's a question I think for all of us all the time. Where is God at? If God is with us, you cannot fail. If God is not with you, you will not win. That applies to everything in your life. The choices you make, the relationships you seek, the futures you're desiring of, you look at it and you go, why am I doing this? What's my purpose? What's my goal? Am I really interested in God being with me, or am I hoping that I can just do this all on my own? And you will be shocked. You'll be shocked to see what God does. I know of another pastor, a friend of mine, who was seeking God's will for his ministry. And he was pretty certain that God had called him away from the church he was serving at. And so he was interviewing a lot of other churches, and he was talking to them, and I was chatting with him during the whole time. And he called me. I would ask, you know, every couple weeks or so, like, oh, you know, who have you talked to, things like that, and what churches are out there. And at one time he called me up, and he was in tears. He goes, Mark, I've made a terrible, terrible mistake. I said, really? What happened? He goes, a call came in. There's this church, and it was incredible. Literally on paper, it was every single thing I had desired in a congregation. And when you look at it, it is incredible to think. It's also closer to my wife's family. It is in an area of the country that I feel much more akin to. Literally everything about this call is great. I'm like, well, that's fantastic. And he goes, no, it's not. He said, I just called him last night and said, I'm not taking the call to your church. And I go, what happened? He says, Mark, I can't explain it really well. All I know is God did not want me to take it. I said, really? He goes, I fought and fought and fought, and I was angry with God. I was wrestling with God. I'm showing God like how good this is. God, this is good. Look at this. This is really fantastic. God was not in it. I knew in my heart of hearts, I should not take that call. And he says, and I have not stopped crying because I don't know if I just angered God and now I'm done. And I looked at him and I said, man, I don't know what's going on. Only you're the one that can answer what's going on in your heart. But let me tell you, if you tell me that God said that's not what you're supposed to be going and doing, and if you are convinced, even especially because all the signs point go this way, but somehow or other you're not, then you know what? God will be with you. And it was tough. He didn't quite believe it. It was really, really hard. It was really painful. And then I stopped talking to him for just a little bit. I think it was like about a month. And he calls me up. He's like, Mark, you will not believe this. And I go, what? What's up? He's like, so you know how I turned down that other call that was perfect? Another call came in and I didn't even realize it. It's even more perfect. And I said, really? He says, I would have never even talked. Like, these people weren't even on my radar. I had no idea that this was where I should even be thinking of going. And I talked with them and everything lined up and I prayed and I was like, dear God, please, like, here's the second time. Don't let this one be the one that also gets away. And he says, I prayed and prayed and prayed. And God said, that's where I wanted you to go in the first place. And so he took the call. And I also know to this day, he is still in that same exact call and doing amazing. If God is with you, you will not fail. If you try and do it on your own, you are going to lose. Well, let's see what happens. Here we go. Verse 42, but the Lord said to me, tell them, do not go up and fight because I will not be with you. Do you see that's the litmus test. Is God in it? You will be defeated by your enemies. So yes, sometimes things change and courses switch. So I told you, but you would not listen. You rebelled against the Lord's command, and in your arrogance, you marched up into the hill country. And that's where it really comes down to, right? It's the arrogance of saying, I don't really need God. I can do this on my own. If you end up in a position like that, you are in very dangerous territory. I'm still convinced that this is the whole reason why the David and Goliath story is all about, do you fight in your own power or do you fight in God's power? We always think of David as this little tiny, you know, small little dude, like he's the little mini asparagus guy, right? And he's fighting the big old giant pickle, right? Bigger than Josh. And we think that, and there's some evidence because of the armor thing, but I don't think that's a good enough excuse. David had said he had fought a lion with his bare hands and one, he ripped the lion apart with his own hand. Maybe that's why the Rams are going to win today. Maybe they will rip the lions apart with, is there a David on that team? That would be very interesting. Anyway, so when David runs into Goliath, let's say you had ripped apart a lion with your bare hands. And then there's this guy and he's defying God and he's all angry and stuff. And you're like, dude, let me fight him. What do you want? What do you want to do? You want to scrap. You want to like I'm going to, you know, go at him and then I'm going to go between his legs and then I'm going to jump right behind him and I'm grabbing by the neck and I'll rip his face apart and then I'll reach my hand and I'll rip out his heart and I'll throw it out and I'll be victorious. Wouldn't that be great? It is a little graphic. Sorry. That's how I, because if I were David, I'd be like, I could do this. What? yeah. It's a bad movie is what it is. But what does God say? Pick up some stones and you're going to use your slingshot. David, it doesn't say it, but I'm sure David's like, slingshot? Are you kidding me? Let me at this guy. But David knew something. If that's what God wanted, it will succeed. That's the end of the story. And if he tried to in his own right, in his own righteousness, in his own power, I think he would have failed. So David did what God commanded. So they marched up, verse 44, the Amorites who lived in those hills came out against you. They chased you like a swarm of bees and beat you down from Seir all the way to Hormah, which I think is kind of funny because what was the main descriptor of this promised land? It was a land flowing with Milk and honey. Oh, man, there's some bees there. And if you don't have God, they're going to come out and attack and sting. And you are going to be. And it's funny. I think it's ironic that he uses that they are like bees. So, yeah, they go up, they attack, and then they just kind of swarm. And they're like, they're running back down the hill, and they're losing. You came back and wept before the Lord, which I go, that's good. Isn't that good? Like, you go, you tried something, it was not what God wanted you to do, and you did it anyway, but then you came back and you wept before the Lord. Of course, the biggest question is, why are you weeping before the Lord? Are you weeping before the Lord because you just got killed and slapped around and punished? Or are you weeping before the Lord because you disobeyed God? Well, apparently, we can say that they were weeping before the Lord because they were just really sad they lost. So you came back and wept before the Lord, and he paid no attention to your weeping and turned a deaf ear to you. We don't really like to talk about God that way, right? But if you are weeping because God does not give to you the things in your life that are bad, he will not care. If you want to, I was going to throw some pictures up there, but it is really funny to watch. Google parents who don't give their kids ridiculous things. Like, one of them was this kid, and they took a picture of this girl, and she's like wrapped up head to toe, and she's in full, and they're at the beach, and you could tell it's like nothing pleasant. They're probably up in Seattle, right? And it's really super cold. And the caption says, my girl wants to go swimming and we won't allow her, and so she's throwing a fit. Well, yeah, don't you? Yeah. Or my kid dropped their entire plate of fish sticks on the ground, and the dog started licking them, and she wanted them back, and I threw them in the garbage, and now she's throwing a temper tantrum because she's not getting the very... This is what often happens to us. We get upset at the things that God says, that's not good for you, and I think I'm just going to have to remove this from your life, and we sit there and throw a temper tantrum. But if God is with us, and he removes things out of our life that are not good for us, then we will always win because we're in a covenant relationship with him. And we have nothing to fear. If our heart is always to go after those things that do not please God and are not part of his plan, you will fail. This is the reason why when Jesus went the way of the cross, a lot of times people, even myself, I look at that and I think that that's one of the craziest things. How are you going to conquer death? Well, I'm going to conquer death by sending my son to die. That's a really strange thing. I think it'd just be better if you know, like came down and floated and got into a battle with Satan and punched him out a couple of times and just declared, hey, everyone's good now. But that's not how God operates. And even though people were trying to tell Jesus, hey, don't go the way of the cross, don't do that, let's not go into Jerusalem, let's not have this happen, he was like, no, you don't understand. This is the plan. And if I dare go against the plan, then my Father is not with me, and that is absolutely 100% unacceptable. I will always do what my Father does. This is the reason why when we see him doing healings, and he heals some people and not others, and he says, well, I'm doing this because this is what my Father is saying. I am so listening to God that it doesn't matter what's happening around me, I will just do what God says. That's that closeness in relationship. This is why when we read stuff like this, it's not supposed to condemn us and make us fall away. It's instead we go, gosh, God has already seen me through so many things. God has already loved me with an everlasting love. He sent his son to die for me. If I have God, I have everything. Why am I looking at the stuff ahead of me and going, what's going to happen? You know what? I'll tell you what's going to happen. You're going to win. Now, I don't know how that's going to happen. I don't think you're all going to start winning the lottery. I don't think you're all going to all of a sudden, get hired on for a six-figure salary. I don't think you're all going to, but you never, ever have to worry about anything in life because God said he will be with you. And as you remain in him, he remains with you. I don't know what giants you're looking at. I don't know what land you're about to enter into, but if you are in the covenant relationship with God, you are good. And if that's what you want, then let's get that today. Let's pray. Father, we are grateful for how you